Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable. Today at the round table, we are Community Education Arts. I am Sarah E. Morin, and I'm here with Alice Kevin-Escober.
Hello!
And we are talking today about our NICE project, which stands for Noblesville Interdisciplinary Creativity Expo. And each year we focus on four different classic books. Today's topic, we're going to be talking about sex and sexuality inside of these four classic books, which are Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte, Gone with the Wind by Margaret Mitchell, Dracula by Bram Stoker, and Little Women by Louisa May Alcott.
Yeah, some of those don't make you think sex and sexuality right away.
Not right away!
Yeah.
I will definitely say that Jane Eyre, of course, one of my favorites.
Yes.
It definitely has some pretty heavily implied sex going on, mm-hmm. or at least a desire for sex.
Mm-hmm. Sexuality, yeah, I think it is. It is definitely part of the story,
mm-hmm, for sure. Rochester is ruled by passions. Jane acknowledges passions, but tries to control herself more than Rochester does.
Yeah.
Now you put in the question here that you wondered if that was related to her childhood. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I think that her ability to control her passionate nature, which I do believe she does have a passionate nature that includes sexuality. I feel like a lot of that could be due to the fact that she had a fairly abusive childhood, mm-hmm. and her poverty as a child and lack of family, throughout her whole life, really leaves her no room to be sort of self-indulgent. And Rochester's passions and the way he's ruled by them come across as often self-indulgent because he is wealthy. You know, he didn't have a great childhood either, but his wealth insulated him in some ways from needing to control himself. And we find out a little bit about that when he's talking about how he first meets his first wife, when he finally reveals his relationship with Bertha and how it unfolded. That is a very self-indulgent young man, you know.
Right, yeah, he's both, in some cases, he is abused.
Yeah.
But he's also very entitled.
Yeah, very entitled. That's a good word, entitled.
Right.
And Jane didn't have that. And so I feel like she is more trained almost by poverty and abuse from a very young age to control her reactions, her feelings, mm-hmm. and that includes her passions and her sexual nature, if you will. So I feel like sex and sexuality plays a part in Jane Eyre, just mostly in ways that we've already discussed in past podcast episodes and or will discuss in future podcast episodes. So
right.
we didn't
yeah.
really want to focus too much on Jane Eyre in this particular set of podcast episodes. Little Women, yeah, Little Women is also one where, you know, you think sex and sexuality, your mind doesn't immediately go to Little Women. And so that book won't be a huge focus in this particular discussion, these episodes we're having now on sex and sexuality. However, I do want to say there are some scenes with kisses. So, you know, we could look at the scenes and say, how sexy is each kiss? You know, they're not really very sexy. None of them are. But it's a good example, this book, of sex and sexuality being implied, but not expressly expressed, if you don't mind my punny little way of saying that. For example, my favorite example is has to do with Meg. Meg gets married to John. A kiss happens, right? When they get married, they get to kiss, you know. And then there's that whole domestic episode of the overcoat and the silk dress. And when she presents the overcoat to John as a gift, as a present, And in my old rattle-paged, I don't know what, the rat-paged book, my old book, it's on page 316. There's just that one sentence that alludes to physical intimacy, and I'm going to quote the sentence. I'm going to read it. "One can imagine what answer he made, how he received his present, and what a blissful state of things ensued." Oh, that's it. That's all we get. And then literally two sentences later, Meg is a mother. She suddenly, you know, and that sentence is, "So the year rolled round, and at midsummer there came to Meg a new experience, the deepest and tenderest of a woman's life." In other words, she gives birth to her twins, Daisy and Demi. And I'm just like, I'm laughing because, you know, it's so comical, you know, in a way that this book was written at a time, you know, by an author who, you know, this is how sex and sexuality was presented, you know, by this author at this time. And it's so sweet and it's so innocent and it's so beautifully written, but it's also kind of funny, you know. It's just like, yeah, okay, well, the blissful state of things that ensued, and then she has babies, you know, after a year rolls round, the year rolled round, and babies are born. And I just found that to be so sweet and endearing and hilarious, in context of talking about sex and sexuality in our four books. That's Little Women, you know.
Right, because we're talking about a time period where you cannot refer to a woman as pregnant.
No, and pregnant women were not really supposed to go out in public a lot. You know, and so the year rolled round, you know, silently, invisibly, and Daisy and Demi were born. You know, I love it. It's great. You know, very different than Gone with the Wind and Dracula. So let's delve into Gone with the Wind a little bit more, because I think the two books, Gone with the Wind and Dracula, are definitely full of sex and sexuality in different ways. Mm-hmm. So where do we want to start with Gone with the Wind? We almost have to start with Scarlett, right?
Yes, please.
Okay. She is definitely aware of her effect on men, but I don't think she's always in control regarding her effect on men. And by in control, I also sort of mean awareness to a certain degree. I think Scarlett, from the time she is a preteen, she knows that men respond to her physically. Does she always know that that's part of what's going on in different situations as she gets older? Sometimes she's very manipulative with her knowledge of her effect on men. And sometimes she seems very surprised and taken aback by her effect on men. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag with her self-awareness in regards to that. The biggest question, you know, for discussion for me is, you know, does her sexuality help or hurt her in her chronic survival mode regarding her marriages and her businesses and just how she lives her life? I'm going to say the short answer is yes. You know, it definitely, she uses it to her advantage when she is aware that it will get her what she needs to survive, literally, in, you know, war and its aftermath, and to enhance her business dealings. She definitely is willing to use her sexuality and her effect on men. You know, her marriages are the perfect example of this. She's married three times, right? And every single time she gets married, her sexuality helps her get the guy to marry her. The flip side of that is that, you know, she has to endure having sex with these men that she doesn't really want to have sex with in order to seal the deal of the marriages, if you will. And I think regarding her businesses, the answer is also pretty complicated because, yes, she uses her sexuality to help her manipulate people regarding business, but her attractiveness is also a dangerous element in some ways. For example, she endures Rhett's humiliating test about becoming his mistress when she needs money for Tara. This is before she marries Frank Kennedy. She puts herself at risk as a businesswoman after she's married to Frank Kennedy and running the lumber businesses and the hardware store, or the the store. I can't remember if it's a hardware store or just a general store. When she goes around, you know, driving around alone in a buggy after her driver, Archie, won't drive her anymore because he thinks she's just horrible. And that's she puts herself at risk that has actual real consequences that we'll get to later. And then she is socially disrespected by her social class, the old guard, you know, southern class of people that were in power before the Civil War. Let's put it that way. So I think that the answers for Scarlett are complicated. What do you think?
No, I absolutely agree. And I think that you pointed out very well in the last episode that the consequences for a woman having deviant behavior mm-hmm. are much higher than for a man having yeah. deviant behavior, this included.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that I found most interesting about Scarlett is how fully she embraces her presentation of her sexuality, but how little she actually enjoys the act of sex, for the
right.
most part.
Right. No, that's very true. And I would say that's for the most part 99% of the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, from the very, very earliest chapters when she's at the barbecue, she's almost a genius of flirtation.
Yes, she is.
Because she has this crowd of young men kind of flocked around her, mm-hmm. little ducklings, and she's completely in control of that social situation. She's basking in their admiration.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
She's using her display, the presentation of the sexuality as a tool. And what she's trying to do is, hey, Ashley, I'm so desirable. Can't you tell?
Right. She's trying to make him jealous, right? It's right. classic. It's classic behavior. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And at this stage in her life, before she has discovered that, hey, I can run a lumber mill. Mm-hmm. I can survive war. I can run a plantation. Mm-hmm. That's her power. Mm-hmm. She enjoys flirting to at least some extent, because it's something she excels at.
Right, and also at this point in the story, we have to remember, the war hasn't started yet. It's about to in like an hour or so, but when she's doing this flirting and trying to make Ashley jealous, her only goal is marriage, and she wants to marry Ashley. That's the only, she doesn't know yet that survival is going to be a goal. Survival of a war, of reconstruction, and that running a business is going to be a goal. She doesn't know any of that stuff is coming down her way. It's all her total focus and her flirtation and all of that is focused on one goal, and that's to get Ashley to notice her and marry her.
Mm-hmm. And I found Scarlett as tedious as toast until she started excelling at the other things.
Sure.
And then I'm like, hey, yeah, you're kind of cool. So... you know, even though she is not always successful mm-hmm. in her flirtation, for example, it does not make Ashley want to propose to her.
No.
Rhett thinks her flirtation is kind of hilarious.
Yep.
But it does at least work a little bit on both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And Rhett is also interesting because he knows she's putting on a performance.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she does use her powers of flirtation just right to get Charles, her first husband, to propose right there on the spot.
Right there on the spot, yep.
Mm-hmm. Same thing within about, one, little buggy ride or walk through town, mm-hmm. her second husband, she steals her sister's fiancé away and he becomes the second husband. Mm-hmm. Frank Kennedy.
Yeah, and both of those are so interesting because Charles also was tacitly engaged to someone else.
Right.
Frank, her second husband, was engaged to her sister. Mm-hmm. So she has no qualms about, quote, stealing a man from another woman, end quote.
Right.
But if it suits her purposes. And she's a very calculated flirt.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So she does use it kind of as a, here's my hobby, mm-hmm. but she also uses it definitely as a tool, mm-hmm. and it is a tool that is available to women when not a ton are.
Right.
Like you pointed out, the rather embarrassing scene where, she is like, okay, I need to use my sexuality and this offer of sex to try to get Rhett to give me money so I can save the plantation.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting, too, is that there's a lot of, the fashion preparations,
yeah.
or the same level almost as important in the preparing for this business proposition.
Right. She absolutely knows.
Sex.
Yeah, she absolutely knows Rhett will see through her if he thinks she's living in poverty. And mm-hmm. and she doesn't want his pity. She doesn't want that. She wants him to think that she's doing fine and that Tara's doing fine. She wants to trick mm-hmm. him. He of course isn't tricked, but you know, but he
right.
and humiliates her in the process of proving to her that he's not tricked.
Right.
So it's not a high point for either of them. That
I think he's tricked for a little bit.
Yeah, well, he is until he kisses her hands and realizes that they're
yep.
calloused, and then he's like, what,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Right.
But you're right, she does absolutely go into it whole hog with the clothing, the attitude she goes in with to see him at the horse jail, as it's called,
mm-hmm.
And she at this point in the story, she doesn't feel she has any options. Charles is dead. He's been dead since the beginning of the war. She doesn't know yet that she's about to embark on a marriage with Frank, because that's
mm-hmm.
not on the horizon. She thinks Rhett is the only person who can get her out of this trouble of paying taxes on Tara and saving her beloved plantation. Join us next time as we continue our discussion of sex and sexuality in our four nice books this year: Jane Eyre, Gone with the Wind, Dracula, and Little Women. This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.